My guest is Kelly Erb, a tax specialist writing for Forbes magazine. And as she says in her bio, paying tax is painful, but reading about it shouldn't be. However, today, Kelly and I are not going to talk about taxes. I hope you guys are a little relieved. But a new scam, which is being perpetrated on unsuspecting students and parents now that school season is in full swing. Hi, Kelly. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So the IRS has issued a new warning to students and their families to be vigilant for scammers. What is the basic con here?
Well, there's a bunch of cons that are going on, but the one that's targeting the students is a phone call, basically, that tells students that they need to pay a federal student tax. There actually isn't such a tax, but students may not know this. Mm-hmm. And so they're told that they have to immediately wire the money, not actually to the IRS. It's just someone who claims to be collecting on behalf of the IRS. And if that doesn't happen, bad things can happen to the student or the family. It's particularly troublesome for students who might be on financial aid or reliant on student loans.
Yeah.
Because those folks are always worried that if they're not compliant with taxes and other issues, then they could possibly be at risk for losing their aid. So it's something that's causing students to panic, and IRS is sending out notices saying, you know, please be aware that this is happening and it's not real.
Well, let's dig a little deeper. First of all, these people who are calling are pretty professional. They know their side of the scam, and they're basically threatening to call the police if the money is not immediately wired or a MoneyGram is not sent. Now, a MoneyGram is an untraceable method for transferring money, so that would be the preferred method of collection, I'm sure. But they also sound very legitimate because they have some piece of information that makes the call seem legit. What kind of things are they saying there?
Well, they might tell the student that they know what college that they're going to. They may know the student's address. In some cases, they've managed to get other identifiable information, such as a social security number. So, you know, the scams actually are kind of on a spectrum of folks that are maybe copycatting other scams that they've heard about and maybe aren't so professional, all the way to folks who are really, really very comfortable doing this because they've been doing it a while and they know what buttons to push.
Yeah.
And the folks that you have to worry about, because I know that a lot of people have been getting these robocalls from people from IRS, and you'll hear some people say immediately, you know, I knew it was a scam, you know, and that certainly is happening. But what IRS is concerned about is that these folks are getting incredibly sophisticated, these scammers, and they know exactly what to say. So again, for students, many of whom may not have established lines of credit, may not be used to dealing with taxing authorities, it can be really scary to have someone call, say, I know who you are, I know where you go to school, here's what you have to pay, and if you don't do it, we're going to take serious action.
Yeah, it can be quite terrifying. So let's talk about some of the things that the IRS will never, never do. Why don't you start?
Well, the first one is, the IRS is never going to initiate phone contact in terms of if you owe something, if there's a question. So your first contact with the IRS is never going to be a phone call saying you must pay us X dollars or else. That doesn't mean the IRS would never call you, but generally the IRS is only going to contact you by phone if you've been in contact with them first. So your first point of contact generally, if you do owe a tax or if there's a question about a new tax, would be a letter that you would get in the mail, and it would say, dear taxpayer, you know, we've determined that you owe us X or you've made this mistake on your return. And then it would tell you in that letter exactly what you'd need to do.
Mm-hmm. And those letters can be pretty unsettling. I know when I started my business in 1996 and started paying taxes on my own as a small corporation, I got a lot of correspondence from the IRS, and the first batch pretty much shook me up. But basically, they were very reasonable. It was always some minor thing and we always cleared it up, and I got my accountant involved and so on. So they're just going to reach out to you. They've never called me. I would never expect a call, but it was always through the mail. So that's clue number one. What else will the IRS never do?
They're never going to call or email you and ask you to verify personal information. So even if you get a phone call that is someone purporting to be from IRS, but they're not actually requesting that you pay, maybe they're just saying, we need you to verify a checking account number. We think there might be a problem with your social security number, so why don't you tell me what it is? That won't happen. So not only will they not call you and demand payment, they will also not call you and ask you to verify personal information over the phone And they will also not email you and ask you to verify personal information. And again, that's a wide range of things that they could ask these scammers, but it generally includes checking account numbers, PIN numbers, and also social security numbers.
Yeah, be smart about that. And they will never demand that you pay taxes without giving you the opportunity to question or appeal the amount that they say you owe. So there's no such thing as, you better pay us now, send us a check, send us a wire, send us a MoneyGram, or else we're going to call 911 and have the police come out and get you. I mean, that is frightening sounding, and these guys and gals are very good at evoking fear. But remember, the IRS will never do such thing. Give me one more thing that the IRS will never do.
Well, the IRS will never tell you that you can only pay one way. That's also should be a giveaway. If you do owe tax, which is why a lot of people kind of get sucked into these scams, these scammers will call and they'll say, you have to pay by MoneyGram, or you have to pay by debit card only, or, and this has become increasingly popular, some other form of gift card, believe it or not. The IRS has determined that there's been over $1 million that's been paid out in iTunes cards. And again, it's the kind of thing that you and I would think, why in the world would anyone answer that, you know, and do that? But if you're scared enough, and if they sound legitimate enough, you could be sucked into that.
Yeah, so let me get this straight. So what are the scammers saying, that you've got a gift card and now you owe taxes on the gift card? Is that it?
No. They're saying you need to pay us. We're collecting on behalf of the IRS.
Yeah.
And the only way that you can pay is by a gift card or a cash card. For serious,
oh,
they actually,
on.
No, it's true. A lot of Green Dot cards, for example, have been tagged as being involved in these scams.
Wow.
But most recently, the iTunes and the gift cards. And the first time I saw this, I thought, you know, who in the world would actually believe it?
Yeah.
But the IRS has actually reported that there has been over $1 million that has been.
Wow.
And again, it's people that get nervous and they feel like if they can just pay, you know, the $100 on the gift card, it'll go away. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that these scammers, once they realize that you're an easy victim, so the first time you answer them and they get what they want, they don't stop calling.
Right.
They actually ramp up their efforts.
Wow. All right. So if you receive a call from someone that sounds suspicious, just hang up. Really, just hang up. It's
Absolutely.
Not personal, right?
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
There's a lot of folks that feel like they should engage with the scammer, but that's a terrible idea. Like, some folks think that if they, you know, berate them, or if they whistle in their ear, or if they challenge them or try to be somebody they're not, that somehow they're winning. You know, we're going to get these scammers. But these are professionals.
Right.
And in fact, if you don't hang up, the chances of you getting tricked are even greater, because they can actually coax information out of you, maybe not money, but information about you that is very, very helpful to them, such as, you know, you might say, I'm going to tell my dad he's a lawyer. Well, now they know your dad's a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Or they may say, wait until my husband gets home. He works for the police.
Uh-huh.
What these scammers do, the ones that aren't just collecting money, is they're actually building a profile that they can turn around and sell. It's identity theft. So you have to be very careful about engaging.
Wow. My guest is Kelly Erb. She is a tax specialist writing for Forbes magazine. Hey, I want to switch gears while we're talking about students and the like. I read that when a Houston man was picked up by deputy U.S. Marshals earlier, he claimed that he had been arrested for failing to pay a $1,500 student loan dating back to 1987. It kind of sounded like he was being hauled off to creditors or debtors prison, rather. What actually happened?
Well, it is scary, because as someone who does student loans, you know, you're always worried about what might happen if you don't pay. But in this situation, it's a little more complicated than just not paying. It is true that he owed money from 1987, and it was a small amount at the time, and it ended up ballooning with fees and interest to more than $5,000. But he just didn't pay it for a while, and eventually the debt got transferred. And you may know that it's pretty hard to discharge student loans. They don't just go away if you don't pay them.
Right.
So he was actually sued to pay what he owed years later, and he did not answer the complaint. And so the government actually won a default judgment against him, because at that point, the loan had actually been transferred to the Department of Education, since the Department of Education underwrites a lot of these loans. And so he didn't pay, and years went by. Like, I think it was 5 more years went by. He still didn't pay what he owed. So he was actually ordered to appear at a deposition and explain why he wasn't showing up to court if he wasn't going to pay. And the court said if he doesn't show up, he was going to be arrested. So it was an arrest warrant, just like you would get for not showing up for jury duty and those kinds of things. And so they tried to serve the arrest warrant on him, and he was surprisingly not cooperative and allegedly said that he also had a gun. There's some controversy about whether or not that actually happened, but the U.S. Marshals then called for backup. And he was arrested, and it was a big deal at that point. There were, you know, federal marshals at his door, banging down his door. So he was arrested, and his underlying behavior was that he had not paid a loan, but it kind of spiraled a little bit out of control.
Sure.
And the lesson, of course, you can learn from that is to always respond, even if you don't have the money to pay. You know, you respond when the government says, right, be here, or explain why you're not going to pay.
Yeah, I mean, I always tell my kids, listen, if the IRS contacts you or something about your student loan, you can't ignore it. You must respond because it does not go away. Well, I'm happy to hear that the real story is that we're not shipping off student loan debt holders to any remote penal colonies in the Pacific. So
not just yet.
That's a relief. My guest, Kelly Erb, tax specialist writing for Forbes magazine. Hey, Kelly, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.